to grow your pipeline? Download the free SDR handbook from Operatix for insider tips and expert advice on how to launch, grow, and manage a successful sales development team. Head to operatix.net/SDR-handbook/ to download now.
Hi, welcome to B2B Revenue Acceleration. My name is Aurélien Moitier, and I'm here today with Ryan Darani, SEO consultant and owner of Ryan Darani SEO. How are you doing today, Ryan?
I'm doing very, very well. Thank you. Thank you for having me, and I'm excited for today.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure to have you on the show. And today we'll be speaking about an important topic because it's how you get found in a way, and a topic that is always evolving. And I believe that you are one of the thought leaders in the space, which is how to drive B2B revenue and growth with SEO. But before we get started, it'd be super good if you could share with us some background as to who you are, Ryan, and how you develop all this knowledge around SEO. And so, you know, take us through a little bit your career and what you've done in the past.
Yeah, sure. I'll keep it as short and sweet as possible. So I've been in SEO now for around a decade. I say around because I kind of dip in and out of other areas of marketing and growth. But I started my career in paid. So paid acquisition was where I kind of learned the chops about digital marketing, learned about audiences and targeting, that kind of thing. And that was in an in-house role way back in the day, almost, it feels like forever ago. And during that time, I kind of took an interest in the organic side of things because paid had become difficult to kind of keep up with budget changes and Google's new introductions to how they run the platform. So I kind of leaned into organic at that time, and it led me to start launching my own websites, testing things, breaking a lot of things. And that kind of pushed me into the realm of working for digital agencies. So I was at an agency for just under 3 years where I was the senior SEO lead, and I was running campaigns for budgets that were 6 and 7 figures plus. And at the peak of COVID, I made the kind of impulsive decision to go out in the old world by myself, launch a consultancy, be a freelancer. And that's where I've been for the last nearly 3 years now. So yeah, it's been a very wild and exciting ride to get to where I am.
That's super exciting. Thanks, Ryan, for sharing that with us. And SEO is a broad topic, right? So, and I think there is a bit of misconception sometimes about what it is. As you mentioned, I think SEO also evolved over time, and there is different way to go about it. So maybe if you could just start by giving us, you know, your definition of SEO for all those of us who are maybe newer to the process or newer to the terminology.
Yeah, sure. I think the real simple version of this is that SEO is basically the practice of making sure your website and your content and your brand are visible in organic search, whether that's Google, which is the vast majority shareholder search engine, Bing, Yahoo, DuckDuckGo, all of the kind of newcomers that are walking into the market as it currently stands. And it's not too dissimilar to paid in the sense of it's based on keywords, it's based on finding the right audience. It heavily relies on the correct landing pages and optimization. I think the real major difference between SEO, which is organic traffic, is that you're not competing with budgets in a sense. You're competing with websites and ranking factors and other similarities that Google takes into account. So it's not just you put, you know, £1,000 into a paid ad and you get £2,000 back. You invest continuously month on month to the point where you can maybe draw that investment back, and the traffic and the kind of rankings sustain themselves for, you know, years to come.
Okay. And so why is it important for brands from your perspective? So I'm asking you some really high level question here, and we're going to go into the details in a sec, but not everybody at the same level. We've got marketing audience, we've got BDR, SDR, so people may be a little bit new. So why is it important for brands to invest in SEO?
That's a good question. And I think that kind of expands out of the B2B space. And that's a question every brand should really ask themselves. But there are a couple of real key things that businesses need to consider is that organic search, by definition, is where most people start their journey. It's, you know, if you wanted to go to a restaurant, if you wanted to go buy some new trainers, if you wanted to, you know, invest in a service, whatever it might be, most of the time, somebody is going to start their journey with a Google search.
Yeah.
And businesses who don't invest in being at the top of that funnel, wherever that funnel looks like, you're leaving money on the table. because there will be competitors out there who are absorbing that market share. There are competitors who are investing in content to kind of attract customers who otherwise wouldn't have heard of you. And they're capitalizing on that by creating funnels, they're creating nurture sequences. And it's the most powerful way, in my eyes, to generate a brand and generate sustainability in that brand for months, years to come, and capture the right people at the right time. It's very, I would call it non-invasive. It's a very inbound way of attracting leads and attracting customers into your business.
Yeah. No, in preparation for this podcast, we spoke about, you ask us if we are doing lots of paid acquisition. We actually don't do a lot of it. So we don't do a lot of advertising to be found. However, we do a lot of in what we believe in, which is content marketing and trying to create good assets. So we want people to find us thought leadership in a way, but also make sure that we rank really high organically for the keywords that matter to us. I would like to get your perspective on the paid versus organic, you know, and I don't know if you've got an opinion about that. I don't know if you're going to say you need to do a mix of both, but if I was a brand new client to you and I don't really know what I'm doing, is it a question of time frame? So would paid get me to where I want to be quicker? Is it a question of time investment because you need to create the content? So I'd like to give us a bit, you to give us a bit of content. That's your, which one should I go? Which evil should I go for? It's what's the strategy? What would be the best approach and the pros and cons of each, organic versus paid?
Yeah, and another good question. And it's a topic that's debated amongst paid and SEO industries for a long, long time. Is paid a more effective marketing channel? Is SEO a more sustainable marketing channel? And I think the real answer is they should, in theory, be able to work together. If you're looking for, you know, short-term, quick results, then of course, paid is going to be your go-to. It's budget-driven. So you come in, you put your budget into a paid ad, and the returns are a lot quicker to see. The problem with that, or at least the challenge with that, is that budgets obviously only go so far, and CPA, CPC, everything gets more expensive as time goes on. So you're going to be forever putting money into Google Ads to try and compete with your market. Whereas with SEO, it's slightly less competitive in the sense you're not too budget reliant on, you know, you're not bidding for a keyword, you're actually investing into your team and your brand. And that provides the sustainability to a point, like I say, if you get to a position in your market where you're holding, you know, positions 1 to 3, 1 to 5 consistently with your content strategy, it's a significantly smaller investment to sustain that over time. But of course, it is an investment. It is a long-term play. It is a long-term game. And I always encourage websites and people that get into this space to think of SEO as a brand builder, because over the months and the years that you invest into this, brand awareness, brand exposure is what's really going to put you in a position to hold traffic for a long time. Whether as, you know, paid as a marketing channel, I wouldn't necessarily call it a brand building channel. It's a marketing channel that generates leads, generates business. And then from that point on, it's down to you as a business to make them advocates.
Yeah. So you mentioned branding. We also more on the organic front. I mean, something that I realized about you is that you've done a really good job on LinkedIn for your personal branding. Okay. Lots of efforts. We spoke about it. You spend a lot of time in building content, sharing content, making sure that you participate to other things and lots of great stuff. So how does that kind of personal branding, or is it part of an SEO strategy?
Yeah, the way that I would look at it is that if you have a big business and you have 3 or 4 really key players in that business that are the thought leaders, the people that attend the webinars, the people that go to conferences, the people that are putting out, you know, data and statistics around things within your industry, then that personal brand will be a lot more attractive to people, because people buy into people. They don't necessarily buy into businesses. And that's why like a sales process or a sales team are so valuable in most businesses, because they have the skills, the charisma, and the kind of knowledge of the product to get people in the door, and they fall in love with the experience that they've had. So from a personal brand perspective, everything ties into everything. So for me, speaking directly about my business, the fact that I'm able to position myself the way that I have in the market means that I have built a level of authority, so that when I put out content on my website, or if I appear on a podcast or whatever the case may be, all that's doing is allowing Google and search engines and users to see that, hey, we can trust him. He's been featured on these things. He runs webinars. He's on podcasts. He's putting out content consistently. So the personal brand aspect of it is actually really, really good for building authority in your space and trust.
Yeah. So I guess it's interesting because I have the same perspective as you in the way I look at it. I don't think we like at Operatics paid search. I don't think we like advertising, maybe because we're not good at it, but we've not really yielded too much results. We think people should find us because we put good content out there. So for us, it's, brand is one thing, but thought leadership is another. Maybe because we are in an industry where there is lots of people who pretend to do things and may not do it as well as they speak about it. So it's an interesting one. And it's an industry where actually it takes a lot of work to get to the results. So even if you share your secrets, for someone to be able to replicate them, it will take a huge effort. It's not difficult to replicate. However, you know, the way I look at all that, I would say it's super important. And then another thing that I would like to add is customer advocacy. Because what I'm going on to here, Ryan, it's going to be a double question coming, but I'm going on to B2B versus B2C and my personal way of buying versus what I think the journey of a B2B buyer is. Mm-hmm. And I think you're a B2B buyer. If you don't really know, you've got two scenarios. You either have friends that know the market very well. And then you go to them and say, hey, Ryan, give me the name of two or three agencies I should speak to if I want that, or companies I should speak to if I want that, okay? Mm-hmm. And then you will have a friend's word of mouth telling you, work with those guys. Ryan is the best at it. Quite frankly, that's going to help your sales cycle drastically. You don't need SEO. Your personal branding is already done because I've got someone that I trust, respect, that tells me to work with you. So that's one way. The other way is that you don't really know, or you get some feedback from someone, but you're not really sure and you still want to check. So you will go online. And personally, I never click on the sponsored ad. I never like the one at the top. And I look at the first organic one because I'm like, maybe it's because of my own experience and trying to be that first one and knowing the pain and effort that you need to put in order to get there.
Yeah.
But I always click that first one. But then what's interesting is all the other things that could come up. So you often have the LinkedIn profile of a CEO that speaks a lot or is very present on LinkedIn. You may have a G2 or Glassdoor. So you'll have the sentiment of the employee, the sentiment of the clients of that organization. And that is really what helped me to build a profile. And I would say that my hook, if I'm going fishing, so basically I'm looking for the bait myself, I'm looking for the food myself, it would be first driven by SEO. I find the company and then I will do further research on the company. And then their presence in terms of how they've been building the CEO or their key member building their personal branding will reinforce my comfort that they are the right people to work with. And I will look at what their employees are saying about them and I will reinforce my comfort of working with them. And you kind of build that profile. And it's very similar to the way I would buy something on Amazon, for example. So I would go online. Let's say I'm looking for a new cardigan. Right. So I probably will do some research from some of the brands, probably have some lookbook, probably look at, first of all, I'll be looking at a look. So I may go on some website to see what the trends are like. And then I may pick up, narrow it down to a few brands. And I may have a look to see, are they ESG? Do they use organic cotton? Are they doing their things properly? Are they sustainable? Do I want to buy that brand? So, you know, and then you build a profile. And then eventually you will look at what customers are saying about them. And then that's how you complete your purchase. So very, very, very long introduction to my next question, which is, do you think there is a massive difference between B2C buying cycles, like me buying a cardigan versus B2B, maybe not buying cycle, because I think we're going too far. I'm talking lead generation, B2C lead generation for someone who wants to buy a cardigan versus B2B lead generation for someone who wants to buy a 150K annual revenue piece of software.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of similarities in the process that people go through to get to the stage before they make the buying decision. I think that the time frames and the type of content people engage with, pretty much like you alluded to, is what's going to separate the B2B space versus the B2C space. So I work with a number of B2B brands, and the kind of key content types that pushes people into the funnel is largely case studies. You know, what have they done for other people in similar industries, and how have they reduced operational costs? How have they helped speed up lead generation? You know, whatever the case may be. So it's less geared toward search intent and more geared towards people. They know they're speaking to a very specific person. So if it's a decision maker, they want to see you've done this before. They want to see that they can be trusted. So for example, like your G2 mention. And with B2C, I don't think people necessarily go that deep. There isn't a brand affinity. Is it the best product for me? Is it the best price? Are there good reviews? And that's probably as deep as it goes. But, you know, if I was to go and buy a new t-shirt, it's very unlikely for me to go and check out the owner of that brand on LinkedIn or Instagram or Twitter to see if, you know, they're putting out content. Whereas with B2B, I probably would. I'd go and check what their marketing team are up to because it's just in my nature. What are the directors up to? You know, what else are they engaged in? What industry events do they attend? Because that builds, in at least in my mind, that this brand can be trusted.
Yeah, there is lots of dissimilarity and similarity. You know, would you buy a piece of software because Kim Kardashian is speaking about it on Instagram? Probably not.
Yeah.
Would you buy Patagonia because their CEO is giving most of his fortune for climate change? Hey, you know what? This is a bit of profile building. So I would agree with you. Now, coming to SEO, and I'm not an expert myself, so you may lose me a little bit, but I would also say that we've got a fair few people who are experts that are listening to us today. What would be your take on what are the trends at the moment or the top tips? Because my understanding of SEO is that it's kind of evolving all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something that is stable. Google are changing their algorithm, the way you go up into the search ranking is evolving over time. I'm sure there is a foundation that remains the same. But right now, what would be your top tips for, without going into too much detail, because you probably don't want to share all your secrets, but if I'm an SEO manager,
yeah,
and say, look, what should be the three things I should, or five things I should concentrate on, what would you say to that person?
So at top level, the thing that I would say focus on immediately is a market analysis. So you understand how large your market is before you invest any resource into any campaign. So that means the landscape, i.e. the people that compete or are going to be competing against you, if they're direct business competitors or are they just direct organic competitors, and get a real sense of what you're going to be going into. Because a lot of the things people don't look at is they'll look at, you know, we've got 1,000 keywords to go and rank for, but they don't look at who is already ranking for those keywords. So your time frames will definitely be different depending on who is already competing for that kind of those kind of terms. Second to that is consistency with content. Again, something people don't typically stay on. They invest content for 3 months, 4 months, and then it kind of starts to die off as leads come in and traffic comes up.
Yeah.
And then thirdly, I would say it's toss up between personalization on your website and automation. So with personalization, I mean with your call to actions, you know, how you're capturing audiences, how you remarket to them, how you segment your content. And automation is how do you reduce the kind of operational timeframe from somebody landing on a piece of content all the way up until they exchange data with you. So those are probably my three key things right now.
Yeah, thanks for that, friend. I believe, having gone through the process myself, that being consistent with the content is probably the most difficult, particularly when you're really early stage. And I don't know if it's a lot of your clients, but I remember putting blog posts together myself, writing them. I'm very bad at it. I hate it. You know, in terms of there is this graph of what gives you the best result versus an energy drain. That was literally at the bottom. It gave me no energy. And I used to have no results. The only people that would like my stuff on LinkedIn would be friends and family.
Yeah.
And you feel bad because you spend hours writing something. You try to perfection a piece of content you think is cool. Mm-hmm. And you put it out and it's a flop. And there is no feeling that are more difficult than that. And it's one thing that is difficult because thought leadership pieces are difficult to put together. And then we evolve what we are doing. So then we got some kind of, we actually had my brother-in-law and some other people, like, you know, kids that were basically coming out of journalist school or things like that, that very good at writing. We would have a call with them. They would interview me on the topic. And then they would write an article about it, or they would write different pieces of content about it, and then you can share them. Again, quite cumbersome as a process. It takes time to review. It's not right all the time. Mm-hmm. But then if you keep one and you've got that content writer, you keep those people going, they get better with time. But then often they may get a job eventually or do something different and you lose them and then you've got to stop the process. You know what? Yeah. What you are doing right now, from my perspective, is the best investment of time to create content, because I think we create content that matters. We cover so much in 30 minutes, 45 minutes with guests like yourself, Ryan. We can cover a lot of different topics. We can then share what we are doing through Spotify, iTunes, because we're on video, we can YouTube, a bit of LinkedIn. You know, you've already got like a few medium where you can share the content. We often have guests like yourself who are extremely well connected. So then you've got a little bit of virality in what you are doing, because you may also share what we've been doing together. which is good for you as well. And then you can take the content of what we discuss. You know, you've got software who probably will understand everything you've been saying and writing everything you are saying. For me, my guys will have to work to translate, you know, as we discussed prior to the conversation, the AI or the cleverness in the software sometimes doesn't get the French accent. But you can actually get the text from it, and then you can create different snippets of content as well from it. So for me, that's a good way to do it, because first of all, you spend my medium, which is speaking to people and having a conversation about a topic that I care about and those people care about, I think is the best way to have a good conversation. But then if you can then break it down in lots of pieces, you know, how cool is that? And that's what I like about doing podcasts. And then I've got my team working really hard to put some industry report together and books together and stuff like that, which, you know, I'm great. We've got people in the team that love it. And we can afford to have those people in the team now. But when we started, we could not really afford them. So the journey is interesting. So I guess my question to you is that content can be such a pain to create and be consistent with it, because not only the consistency means that you've got to allocate time to it, but also the consistency means that you've got to don't fall at the follow order. You've got to wait to build the profile. You don't just put one piece and it goes viral straight away. You probably have to work harder than that. So what is the advice that you give to, you know, let's say entrepreneur or earlier stage companies that want to do SEO so they don't give up on consistently creating content? Do you have any tactics for them?
I mean, you say some brilliant things when you kind of lead up to the question. So what you said is absolutely correct, is if you only have the time, if I was to put this into an SEO context or an organic content strategy context, you can take one piece of content, one brilliant piece of content, and chop it up into 100 pieces of content. And let's say, for example, this podcast, like you said, there are tools now, AI tools, that will take this YouTube video, this podcast, and chop it into 40 or 50 pieces of content automatically. They'll chop it up into the relevant pieces. They'll also add captions. They'll also create the LinkedIn or Instagram or Twitter post for you and eliminate that entire process. So that means you don't need a video editor necessarily. You don't need to go out and create separate pieces of content for different platforms. This tool will do it for you. And I think the adoption of AI technologies and technologies in general is where a lot of the market maybe falls short, because they are expensive, they are hard to get to grips with, and you're not sure if you're investing in the right platform up front. But the way that I would recommend consistency with your content is lean into those tools, find workflows and processes and ways that you can make your content stretch as far as possible without you having to produce, you know, large quality quantities of it by yourself. And one thing I get asked a lot when I go into businesses is, should we outsource this content? Should we go and find a team of writers to do this for us, or, you know, an individual writer to do it for us, or should we keep it in-house? And I say, for a lot of early stage startups, the best way to do it is to keep it in-house, build the processes, build the workflows, build your tone of voice, and get familiar with the style of content you want to produce. And then when it gets too much, where you simply can't keep up with it because the business is growing, then you look to outsource and keep it low volume. Keep it, you know, 4 pieces of content a month that you can distribute for the next 6 months, and try and stick to a schedule. So, because that is the hardest thing, at least in my eyes, that I struggle with, is that, you know, we all get busy. You know, I'm back to back on calls, or I've got a fire to put out somewhere. So I struggle to find time for personal brand and content in general. But if you've got it scheduled out, you've got that hour blocked out to go and write 1,000 words, do that every day, and you'll have a pretty consistent schedule that you can stick to.
Yeah. I've had some people telling me that they're using ChatGPT to create some content as well, which is interesting. I've not been there yet. But I agree with you. I think the tone of voice is something that is super important, because if you want to bring an agency, I mean, first of all, finding an agency, it depends what you do. If you do something that is super commoditized, you could find someone who's got experience in your space. But, you know, creating content when you don't understand the space, wow. It's like trying to summarize a book when you've not read the book.
Exactly.
It's going to be very, very, very difficult. So, and that's one of the big challenges. So yeah, making the effort is important, and scheduling time, that's cool. You mentioned tools there, Professor. So it kind of makes me think about something that you mentioned earlier on. So is there any tool that you recommend for SEO and marketing? I know that you mentioned automation tool earlier on, so for retargeting and stuff like that. So do you have any partner technology or any tool that you like or that you would recommend people using?
Yeah, there's a few consistent tools that I use pretty much every day. So the two big ones are Ahrefs. So AHREFS and right. SEMrush. So those are probably the two biggest, and they're great for keyword research and competitor analysis, but for content strategies and writing content and making that whole workflow easier, I use a tool called Phrase. So FRASE. And that speeds up the entire workflow for me. It has AI tools built into it. So I can create content outlines. I can optimize my content. I can look at all of the things my competitors are writing about in a single platform. So that has been absolutely so valuable to me. And a couple of others which are free, which people don't necessarily use or know about, is Microsoft Clarity for like UX heat mapping, and then Google Analytics, which is obviously free, and then Google Search Console, because a lot of people have Google Analytics, but they don't have Google Search Console. And those two together, they are free and they're from Google. So the value of information and the data you can get from those platforms is incredible.
Yeah, that's good. I'll have to check if we're using all that. Last question for you. I asked you about the three tips. You did well on that one. Three mistakes. What are the common issues or mistakes that you see people doing with SEO?
The first one I would say is the biggest, is that most websites don't necessarily invest too heavily into the overall experience of the website and how well that converts. Especially there are some industries where design is probably one of the most important things, and then in others, it's not so important at all. And as the web has progressed and as Google has become more complicated, the experience and the website in general is so important to how Google views the website. That's probably number one. Number two is that there is no process or workflow on managing content. So like we said, whether that means they're just not consistent with it, or content just gets put out for the sake of producing content, and that in turn means that there is, say, 100 pages of content on your website that generates no traffic, which looks really, really bad in the eyes of Google, and probably not so great for users if the page is thin, hasn't got a lot of detail in it. It's not great. And then thirdly, is businesses overlooking how important it is to focus on, it's now called EEAT, but it used to be called EAT, okay, which stands for expertise, authority, and trustworthiness.
All right.
Which is basically how you build a brand. So businesses don't show off their popular authors. They don't show off their C-suite members. They don't show off their team. They don't mention where they've been featured in press. They don't show where they've attended an event, or they don't show where they've delivered a podcast or a webinar. It's very insular. They just have, you know, here's our content, here's what our company does, here's how long we've been around, but we know nothing about the team that sits behind it. We know nothing about where you've been featured. I can find nothing about the authors of your content on the web. So it makes it very difficult for Google in particular to trust who you are as a brand.
Cool. Super. Yeah, this makes perfect sense. I didn't know about the EEAT. I need to look into that. But I think we're quite keen to share successes. So if we've got anything, and we love showing off our people. So I think we should be good on that front, but we probably do it without understanding the context. But look, Ryan, thank you so much for sharing everything you shared with us today. I think there's some good nuggets here. I'm taking some notes about things that I definitely want to check with my team. You know, SEO is so important. As I mentioned often, I think what we do at Operatics, which is kind of the SDR, BDR, or at least a big part of our offering, is kind of the hunting mode. It's like the red dot, see the sniper approach. You pick someone, you get the sniper on, and then you go and target them and deliver the message to them.
Yep.
But I think the SEO is more like almost like a phishing way of finding leads, because you want to put your bait where people are going to do it, basically, and then you teach them that way. But those two strategies are very important with each other, because you know, targeting people very directly is good, but it's extremely expensive. It costs a fortune in SDR. It costs a fortune in playbook. You've got to change your tactic. You've got to adapt to the market. You know, we're targeting a lot of clients in North America. Mm-hmm. How do we react to the Silicon Valley Bank malarkey that happened last week? Okay. Yep. Do we include that in our pitch or not? So you've got to add all those things. You need to do also in marketing anyway. But what I'm saying is that it's a very dedicated channel, SDR, BDR. And in my eyes, only makes sense if your average deal value is over 50, 60K, 70K, because you can really invest in the people to bring the bigger deals. However, you can also bring fantastic deals with SEO. But you, you should really let the SEO work your mid-market, your mid-enterprise, your less big accounts. And that's how you create a strategy to bring them. So those two together have been working really well for us. So thank you so much for sharing your insights, Ryan. Now, if anyone is listening to us today, I'm an SEO professional. I want to have more conversation with you, more, ask you more questions. Or I'm an enough marketing or entrepreneur, and I'm actually struggling with my SEO. I'm not happy with where I am. I don't think people find me. I don't think I'm ranking well. How do we get hold of you, Ryan? What's the best way to reach out to Ryan?
The best way is LinkedIn. So Ryan Durrani on LinkedIn. Second to that is just my website. So ryandurrani.com. Those are probably the two easiest places to get a hold of me. And if there are people that are struggling with this, I do have like a 30-minute free consultation where people can just have a chat with me, pick my brains. So if there are people out there that need to kind of reach out and do that, feel free.
That's very nice, Ryan. Let me finish with a short story. You've got to tell me if I was stupid or not back then.
Okay.
When we started Operatics is kind of a weird world, you know, and Google was just trying to sell us opera tickets, telling us what the opera is in London or whatever. But when we started Operatics, my business partner and I, so we spent a lot of time in California back then. So we would go to the equivalent of any laptop shop or Apple store or, you know, like the Currys or PC World in the UK. We would actually tether from our phone and go to all the computers that were around the shop. We knew that Operatics, if we type Operatics sales development, we are on page 7. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we would go tether from our phone from each computer, put that in Google, go to page 7 and just click that link. Okay. And I think it helped us to move to page 1.
Yeah.
We were typing Operatics sales development. That's a very cheap. We did it as a bit of fun to start with, but then we're like, that's actually working, so let's carry on doing it. Obviously, we realized that it was not a good use of our time very quickly, but was it stupid to do that, or is it the way to do SEO if you've got lots of time and very, very little money?
It's so funny you say that. No, I don't think it was a waste of your time. I think it's brilliant. I was very, very intelligent and innovative of you to do that. There are indirect signals that Google takes into account and clicks are one of them. So there is a kind of a darker side of SEO where it's called CTR manipulation. So you can have people do it for you. You can run Facebook ads and do it. You can have software and do it. So it is doable. I wouldn't recommend it being a sustainable strategy forever, but there are ways that you can use CTR to manipulate the search engines, at least for the first 2 months, and then traffic will take over by itself. So I'll give that one black hat secret away, but it's awesome that you did that by yourselves actually in the shops. That's great.
Yeah, there is the motorway from San Francisco to San Jose, and we're based in San Jose, but had a lot of meeting in San Francisco, and that's called the 101. I will literally come to each exit and go and do that to the shopping center, all the Westfield along the way.
Brilliant.
It was fun, you know, when you're starting, you've got to be a bit gritty. So, but it did seem to work. So we kind of carried on, and then it became a little bit addictive. We just kind of doing it. We developed better techniques to do it. We are better organized to do it. But yeah, anyway, thank you so much for confirming that he was not completely silly. It was an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Ryan. So
likewise. Awesome. Thank you. I very much appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thank you.
You've been listening to B2B Revenue Acceleration. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.
Looking to grow your pipeline? Download the free SDR handbook from Operatics for insider tips and expert advice on how to launch, grow, and manage a successful sales development team. Head to operatics.net/SDR-handbook/ to download now.